of the Ecumenical Patriarchate presents
In the Narthex
with Father Paul Patitsis.
Join him as he shares with us the ancient apostolic faith of the Christian Greek Orthodox Church.
And now your host, Father Paul.
Welcome to In the Narthex, a radio program of the Sacred Archdiocese of New Zealand. I'm your host, Father Pavlos, of the Holy Trinity Greek Orthodox Church, located in lovely Western Springs. Hopefully you have been enjoying the program as much as we enjoy sharing with you. Last week we spoke to you about St. Irene Krusevalandu. Today we want to speak to you about someone who perhaps one day will be declared a saint, and her name is Taxiarchia of Portaria and of Saxenburg. And we're going to give you some information about her today, which, of course, as Presbyteros reminded me, we've shared with you on other programs of this, program here. So if you've heard it before, we apologize, but we ask you to stay tuned and listen again. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Also, we have on our agenda today to talk to you a little bit about the Feast of the Transfiguration of our Lord, which is coming up on Sunday. Now, that may be something you've never heard before, but hopefully if you have lived in the church, you know that the Feast of Transfiguration is important. It's called in Greek metamorphosis, which in English we have the word metamorphosis. So it's a Greek word. And it talks about the time when Christ appeared before his disciples, radiant as light. That was the politikion for the Feast of Transfiguration. You are transfigured on the Mount, O Christ our God, revealing your glory to your disciples as much as they were able to bear. And that's important to realize how gentle is our Lord. He doesn't overwhelm us. He doesn't force us. He reveals himself as much as we are able to accept and to see. And so that should tell us when we're trying to question God, sometimes we say, well, is God real? And is that we have to kind of change our spirit and be more open to him. Otherwise, we're telling him we're not available. There isn't anything there from us that can receive what he might want to share with us. And so just the simplest thing that you can do if you want to experience Christ is to ask him to reveal himself to you, especially now in the Feast of the Transfiguration. Say, Lord, I need to know you. I need to know who you are. And then knowing you, I will follow you. And perhaps you're not going to sense anything, but maybe you will. And of course, many people have. So we hope that you have that experience as well. Now, as I said, we're going to talk to you today about Yerondisa taxiarchia. Now, the word Yerondisa means elders. Yeron in Greek just means old person or older person. We have in the English geriatric medicine, it comes from the word Yeron, G-E-R, meaning old. And so old person. Now, of course, Yerondisa was not old in years, but she was very wise. And so she had acquired the wisdom of old age, even though she was very young. She was born in 1938 in the city of Portaria, Greece. At a very young age, she suffered from rheumatic fever that damaged her heart. And that damaging stayed with her for her entire life. At the age of 33, strangely, that's when she entered the monastery for the first time. And I've asked Presbytera Katarina to share with us some thoughts, and she may share with us a little bit about that later. But then in the year 1971, she entered the monastery, and 1 year later, she was made a great schema nun. And a great schema basically means that you've reached the pinnacle of monastic excellence. So in 1 year's time, from age 33 to 34, she reached the pinnacle of monastic excellence and was made a great schema nun. And then in the year 1989, when she was 51 years of age, she came with Elder Ephrem of Mount Athos Philothea Monastery at the time to visit the United States. And there they met with the then Bishop of Pittsburgh, retired Metropolitan Maximus. And they took them to a piece of property that had been donated to the parish in Oakmont, Pennsylvania, to the archdiocese or to the diocese for the establishment of a monastery. And there's a story there too. I don't remember the name of both people who were the donors. One was Elpeniki, and I forgot now the other fellow's name. And there she established the monastery in 1989 with one other sister who was with her, Sister Ephremia, and then later quickly Sister Theanoa joined with her, and Sister Parthenia, and then many others after. But then in the year 1994, after only serving for 5 years, she died. And in that five short years, she took the small little country house and made a monastery out of it. So we're going to come back and tell you some more after another bit of beautiful music. Listening to the chanting of the monks of Mount Athos. I'm not sure which monastery, but I want to say Simono Petra. And they are singing Megalinon Psichimo, Magnify, O My Soul. And it's a beautiful, beautiful hymn. And if you come to the Orthodox Church, you will hear the Byzantine music chanted. Of course, in some churches we can chant it better than others, but the place that you hear it the best, of course, is in on Mount Athos, Greece. Now we're back to talk to you about this beautiful woman who was born in Portaria, Greece, who became from a young woman to become a nun, and in 1 year to become a great schema nun, and then later, not knowing it, of course, at the end of her life, coming to found a monastery in Saxonburg, Pennsylvania. I have with me someone who is an eyewitness to her first years in the United States, and that is my own beloved Presbytera, Ekaterini. How are you, Presbytera?
I'm doing fine. You also have someone who's usually with you when you're here on the radio.
Yes, thank God for that. So, Presbytera, tell us, first of all, because you knew Taxikia very well, tell us about how did she come to stay at the monastery at the age of 33, and was she immediately accepted, or what was the story there?
Oh, gosh, you know, there's so much that's still after all this time. I don't know, but I'll tell you what I do know. This property had been given over, as you were saying, to the archdiocese, or to the metropolis, for the building of a monastery. And the couple who had lived there on this tiny four-room farmhouse, it's a very small little farmhouse with a basement, and that's where it all started. When they passed away, they buried the couple on the property, and so you'll see their tombstone there still today when you go. But there, it's also has been developed since then because of Taxiadhia's willingness and obedience to come and head that monastery.
Now, I did want to hear that story, but what I wanted to know, if you don't mind sharing, when she was 33 years old and she went to the monastery in Volos, the Panagia Podikitria, what was that like for her?
Well, she had promised that she was going to work in the vineyard of the Lord, so to speak. She had promised the Virgin Mary, because she asked for a miracle. She asked for herself to survive rheumatic fever. And so when she did survive, she considered it a miracle. And she went to the monastery and stayed there for 3 months. The abbess there allowed her to stay and allowed her to participate with the nuns as usual. But it's really unusual for a 33-year-old woman to be able to come into a monastery and get with a program, so to speak, because it's a tough training, and so they usually want younger women so that they can be formed, kind of like soldiers. You don't want a 40-year-old man becoming a soldier. You know that there's a physical aspect to it, but there's a psychological aspect, too. People, by the time they're in their 30s, they're set in their ways. But she did what nobody expected. It's a lovely story how the abbess in Volos had interviewed her, asked her how she liked her 3 month stay, and was preparing to tell her, you know, we probably won't keep you. But when she heard what Taxiadhia had to tell her about her experience, her abbess, the abbess Makrina, changed her mind and invited her to join the sisterhood.
Wow. Well, she must have heard something very, very special from Taxiadhia at that time. And, of course, her name when she was in the world was Aphrodite. And, of course, in ancient Greece, that was the goddess of love. But she was a person of tremendous love.
She was.
And then she went on to accept this role of being a nun. Did she, I think I remember you saying that she went through a period of silence after she was...
I was told by one of our fellow clergy family members when we were still living in the United States that she had done 10 years vow of silence, and then she was there for another 7 years, so 17 years altogether before she came to the United States.
Well, that's unusual, isn't it? Even in Orthodoxy, tremendous vow of silence. We don't have cloistered nuns who don't communicate with the world and so forth.
There You know, unless somebody has as a particular obedience, no, it's not something that is done typically in a monastery. Because hospitality is such an important part of the Greek Orthodox monastery, you need to be able to talk to people. So
obviously her beginning of that vow also coincided with her taking on the great schema. So that in that sense, it would make more sense because she was taking on an extra heavy burden of asceticism. So that she could model herself after Christ, you know?
Oh, plus, I mean, how many nuns have you known who are in the monastery for a year and are awarded, so to speak, the great schema? I mean, that's almost unheard
of. I think,
of.
Yeah, it's unheard of. I mean, the only time you sometimes hear that is if someone is on their deathbed or something, they want to send them off well and, you know, kind of congratulate them for having entered the monastery, even at their last. But here, in this case, she wasn't on the deathbed of any kind, and she received the great schema. Now, you said how when she came to Saxenburg, she found basically a farmhouse, a four-room farmhouse, and a big open field with nothing in it.
With nothing in it and one nun to help her.
Well, the other thing I remember, it had no roads. The roads were all dirt roads in the whole area, not just on the property, but to the whole area where the monastery was located. There were no neighbors of any kind, no one around. You know, if you cried help, no one there to hear you. And who was their biggest protector at that time? Do you remember?
Oh, all I can say is the Virgin Mary. I mean, I don't know who else would have been their big protector. I know that there were people who were coming in from Pittsburgh to help, and there was, and they had a dog that they called Fruity.
I think I wanted to mention Metropolitan Maximus. I thought you might mention him. He was often there. Assisting them, helping them at the beginning?
You know what he did? He would come around once a week, and he would drive himself. It was an hour drive from where he lived and where his offices were, and he would go to see them at least once a week, be there for Vespers, help them with their gardens, because they had so much work to do in the house, and he wanted them to have a vegetable garden so that they could eat from. He couldn't see having a monastery without their own vegetable garden, and he tended to the tomatoes himself. He didn't want anybody else to tend to the tomatoes. He wanted to make sure that he did that for them.
Well, you seem to indicate, and I read something you wrote recently, that he was pretty good at those tomatoes. How big did those plants get?
Yeah, they were over 6 feet tall, for those of you who know the old English version of measuring things. They were about as tall as you.
So at least a meter 80, something like that.
Oh, maybe even 2 meters or more. I mean, they were the tallest tomato plants I'd ever seen, because we went in there to tie them up. Yeah. On posts together with the abbess, and the sun was going down, it was getting dark, and they were saying the compline prayers by heart as they were doing their work in the garden, and the abbess was asking me to hold some of the instruments that they were using, you know, the whatever they were cutting with and things like that,
and a flashlight, I assume?
Yes, there was a flashlight.
What do they call
torch.
It here? Torch.
Yeah, they call it a torch. And we call it a torch, too, now that we've lived here for so long. And so anyway, that was a really special experience to be in the garden and praying with these high-level spiritual people. And they were, both of them, just intensely, wonderfully loving and spiritual.
Yes.
People.
The other thing that was so obvious about both of them is that for them, prayer came naturally. It was something they had, these prayers were prayers they had memorized. It said them so often. They could say them in their sleep if they wanted to. But anyway, we had that wonderful experience of her, and she said about establishing a community of tremendous love. And in a short amount of time, she filled the monastery, didn't she?
She did. There were all kinds of women who came, converts, women who grew up in the faith, every level of education, talents. You know, one of the nuns there had been accepted to Juilliard Academy Music, and she decided she wanted to be a nun instead. Another one was a professional nurse. Another one was an artist. And all of them had... Actually, I think we have two nurses there. And just... They wanted nothing more than to be there. And she was a wonderful, wonderful abbess for them.
Well, we certainly benefited from having that monastery in our life. And, of course, they didn't stay with the little farmhouse. They ended up building a beautiful building, and many people got involved. And I remember walking around as it was under construction and In the monastery, of course, in the women's monastery especially, there are certain areas where men are not permitted to go. They're private quarters. And so while they were still under construction, I was invited to see that part of the building, knowing very well that that would be my only opportunity. And it was beautiful to be a part of that.
I was remembering something. I just forgot.
So much to say, but we should also comment about the wonderful support that the monastery received from the young adults of that time. Father John Talumas, and Father George Livanos, who did so much to help raise
funds.
Father John Chakas. I'm sure there are many others, but anyway, Father John Talumas especially was involved with the Walk for Paradise, which helped to invigorate the youth to help raise money to pay down and pay off, ultimately, the mortgage.
And it was a wonderful gathering, that one. But one of the things that I remember before they actually got into the new monastery, it was some 10 rooms for the nuns, and a kitchen, and a gathering room, and the chapel. And they were just getting ready to move, and I said to Yerondisa, because she was so sweet about everything, and so I said to her, you know, you're going to go into that monastery, but... Now imagine, she was part of a really big monastery, a very efficiently functioning, there was a room built for every job they needed to do. If they needed to sew, there was a room for it. There was a special room for iconography. There was another place that was a library where they would practice their chanting. They could practice their chanting in the church. I mean, they had a facility there. But here in this four-room house, she must have been frustrated and exercising her patience to the utmost. So I said to her, you know, I have a feeling when you go to the big house over there that you're going to miss this little place. And she just very sweetly just looked at me and said, and why would that be?
Well, anyway, do we have...
Yes.
We're running out of time. Do you have some other music to share?
We do. It's waiting for you right here.
Okay. We're hearing the praises sung by the nuns of Ormelia, and we're talking today about Hierondisa Taxiarchia. And today, that same monastery, the Nativity of the Theotokos, is led by Hierondisa Theophano, who was one of the first nuns who joined that monastery. And her story also is very intriguing and very gripping, but we're not going to talk about that today. But please, you know, I encourage you to look up the nuns on the internet, and if you're in the area, go see them. But if you're not in the area, write them a letter, and they would be happy to hear from you. And I'm sure they would welcome any gift of support you might send them. Just recently, they had a horrible fire at the monastery, and that's one of the reasons why we're focusing on the program today, because we want you to know that they need some help. And the monastery was struck by lightning, and it was a very difficult thing because the nuns were all present when it took place, and they had to evacuate the monastery, and the monastery suffered tremendous damage. And I don't know how the nuns are getting along because we are far away, but our love and our prayers go out to Metropolitan Savas of Pittsburgh, and of course all the faithful of the Pittsburgh metropolis, as well as to Hierondisa Theophano and the sisters of the Monastery of the Nativity of the Theotokos. One last thing we wanted to share with you before we talk about the Feast of Transfiguration is that this woman who we shared with you about today was a saint. I mean, she lived a very holy life, and she had many spiritual gifts, including clairvoyance, knowing the thoughts of others, and even knowing the future, and also the gift of ceaseless prayer. And we can say that many have even been healed through her prayers. and intercessions to Christ. And some of them here in New Zealand. And we're so privileged to have a small relic of the saint here in New Zealand. And I know some of my parishioners have attested to the fact that the this beautiful relic has healed them of cancer and healed them of other nerve damage to the back and other things like that. So what can we say? I mean, those things are, you can only take them on faith. That's not my back and it's not my cancer to confirm that it happened. But the people to whom these things happen gave the glory to God through the intercessions of Hierondizo Daxiarchia. Now, as I shared with you, we are now in the great Lent, that is to say the Lent for the Panagia, or the Mother of Our Lord. And during this time, on the 6th of August, we always honor the Feast of the Transfiguration. And I'm going to read to you just shortly from the Bible, Matthew chapter 17. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John, his brother, and led them up a high mountain apart. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his garments became white as light. And behold, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. And Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is well that we are here. If you wish, I will make three booths here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. He was still speaking, when lo, a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell on their faces and were filled with awe. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, Rise and have no fear. And when they left, and when they lifted up their eyes, they saw no one but Jesus only. And Jesus commanded them to tell no one the vision until the Son of God is Son of Man is raised from the dead. So that's the very brief story, only a few verses long, but a very important story in the life of the church, because it speaks to the humanity of Christ, but also the divinity of Christ. And as the church interpreted over the years, the beautiful intention of God to sanctify and transfigure all that he created and fill it with his light, but especially the human being, to make us images of his holiness and transformed also with light. And that is very, very strong tradition of the Orthodox Church, this theology of metamorphosis, and transfiguration. So we can spend more time on that another day, but it should be something that if you have time on Sunday, please join us for the Divine Liturgy that day as we take time to celebrate the feast.
What's on the outside that makes a man what he is? It's that hidden man of the heart that knows just who he is. 'Cause you might hide some things inside that people just can't see, but that hidden man of the heart knows where you stand.
We thank you again for listening to our radio program in the Narthex, and we look forward to being with you again next week, every Friday, 3:15 to 3:45 on Planet FM, which is 104.6 on your FM dial, and also you can listen online at www.planetaudio.org.nz/in the Narthex. If you have any trouble reaching it that way, just go to the Planet FM website and then look up the programs for Greece, and you'll see us listed there. And thank you again for listening. This ministry, as always, is a ministry of His Eminence Archbishop Amphilochios and the Greek Orthodox Archdiocese of New Zealand, headquartered in Wellington. They might say they know the Lord.
his scriptures word for word. But that hidden man of the heart knows where they stand.